From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Reporter Edgar Walters spent a good part of 2016 trying to reach a woman named Jean Hall.
I have been trying to reach Jean. I think I understand she may be in Paris, Texas these days.
Yeah. She connected to me through Facebook, but now it's been probably, I want to say 6 months or more since I've seen her on Facebook.
He tried her friends, he tried her uncle. Finally, he got in touch with her lawyer.
So, did you end up meeting with Jean Hall?
Yes, I did.
And
I told her that you had called.
Okay.
And gave her your information.
Edgar was working on a story about the child welfare system in Texas, and he'd found Jean's story buried in thousands of pages of court documents. He wanted to talk to her in person about what she's been through.
Gauging from her reactions, it seemed like she was interested in talking, or...
It was hard to say. Jean's a pretty damaged young woman.
Finally, after 4 months, Edgar finds out Jean is living with her mom in a trailer park. And it turns out they do live right on the edge of Paris, Texas, a sleepy rural town near the border with Oklahoma. To Edgar's surprise, Jean invites him to come visit.
I was telling my mom because at first I wasn't going to call y'all back.
Jean's got pale skin and freckles. She's slender and so small, she almost disappears into the big blue armchair in her living room. For months, she's been afraid to talk. But now that she and Edgar are face to face, she seems ready to open up.
And I was in there telling my mom, I'm like, man, I'm 21 years old and I still to this day have everything just gets piled back up and piled back up and piled back up.
Everything that Jean's been through comes back to her traumatic childhood and a child welfare system that failed to help her. It's a difficult story to hear and not appropriate for all listeners. But Jean's still trying to be positive. She shows Edgar her tattoos.
I have this on my ankle. It's cherry hearts, one for each one of my kids. And then I have my daughter's name on my back.
She's planning on getting another tattoo of the word love.
Love just represents, you know, everything that I've been through, and I still have the heart of gold.
The state has been a part of Jean's life for almost 10 years, but she sees her time in foster care as especially damaging. Across the country, hundreds of thousands of kids are adrift in foster care, many in Texas. Every week, more than 30 kids run away from foster care here. A lot of them end up on the street and find themselves forced to sell sex to survive. We first brought you this story in 2017. Our partners at the Texas Tribune have been investigating why so many foster kids end up being exploited by traffickers and how the child welfare system fails kids like Jean.
You're not protecting me. You're not protecting my family. Child Protective Services, you know, they're not there for the children. They damage us more than they help us.
Edgar Walters of the Texas Tribune picks up Jean's story.
Jean rocks slowly back and forth in her chair as she opens up. She smokes a cigarette and gets up every few minutes to shoo away one of her cats. Her mom mostly stays in the other room, except to check in on her a couple of times.
Love you, Mama.
Love you too, baby.
Even as our conversation takes a dark turn, Jean stays upbeat. She laughs a lot during our interview. But that abruptly changes when I bring up one thing, her dad.
You know, my dad was, we were close. I mean, he drove a school bus for the school that I went to. I rode the school bus to school with him. I rode the school bus home with him.
Jean's parents were separated, and she'd lived with her mom when she was young. But her mom struggled with drug addiction, so Jean moved in with her dad when she was 9. No one ever imagined what would happen next. Her father pulled her out of school, and over the next 5 years, he raped her, repeatedly. Eventually, he got her pregnant.
And so I
It's hard for Jean to talk about.
Oh, I lost my train of thought.
My colleague, Nina Satija, tries to apologize for bringing back all those memories. But it's Jean who reassures us.
No, you're fine. You're fine. It's okay.
Jean gave birth to a baby girl in July 2009. She was 13. Child Protective Services, or CPS, came to investigate her pregnancy a few times. But Jean says whenever they questioned her, her dad was close by. She was too afraid to say anything. It took a year before she got the courage to go to the police. They immediately called CPS, and Jean and her daughter Bridget were placed in a foster home together.
I wanted to think that CPS was actually going to be there for me and do something good for me, and they didn't.
I should explain something here. Texas handles foster care differently than any other state in the country by splitting kids into two categories. One is for temporary care. Those kids will probably go back to their families or be adopted. They get a lawyer, a special advocate, and regular hearings in front of a judge. Jean was in a different category, called Permanent Managing Conservatorship, or PMC. The key word is permanent.
As PMC girls, or PMC kids, period, were there till we turned 18, and it was like CPS didn't want to make it any better for us, or they didn't want to make us feel like we were at home.
These kids don't go back to their families. Most of them don't get a lawyer or advocate. And oftentimes, they bounce between at least five different placements in foster care. In just 2 years, Jean and Bridget stayed with three foster families. Then they were moved to a short-term shelter, and after that, to a group home with about a dozen other kids.
You read those children's files, and you just cannot believe that they are still standing on this earth after what they've experienced.
That's Alicia Fry, who runs the group home where Jean stayed. She remembers Jean's struggles and what pushed her over the edge. We'll never know the full story, but while Jean was in foster care, CPS decided to take her daughter, Bridget, away from her.
And I began to have suicidal thoughts.
Jean felt like CPS had failed her. She remembered how her dad had stopped her from reporting him for years through manipulation and threats.
My dad used to tell me, you know, you can go tell what's going on, but, you know, CPS is going to take you. They're going to take your daughter from you. And exactly what my father told me they would do, they did.
When Jean lost her daughter, whatever progress she might have made at Jonathan's place disappeared. And Alicia knew what could happen next.
You were trying to instill in these girls that they're amazing and that they're strong and they can do anything. And I know that if we don't do it, then I'm going to lose these girls to the street.
That's what happened to Jean. Jean and another foster kid decided to run. A friend had told them they could go stay with this woman named Jasmine. Jasmine had a place on the other side of town, where people with nowhere to go could just hang out. So one night, Jean stuffed her backpack with her nicest things. In the morning, she got dropped off at school, but she didn't go to class. Instead, she walked down the road to this bus stop on Waterhouse Road. She was clutching a piece of paper with Jasmine's address. Jean took the city bus, two different trains, and then another city bus to a rough neighborhood in southeast Dallas. She arrived at a duplex with a red door. After gathering her courage, she knocked.
So the first girl came was Jean.
That's Jasmine Johnson. And she called Jean the first girl because another girl showed up later that day. She was a foster kid, too.
I let everybody come to my house. You know what I'm saying? It was an open house. You know what I'm saying? If you ain't had nowhere to go, I let you stay at my house on Gonzales Street. We call it G Street.
Jasmine let Jean have fun on Gonzales Street. Jean got a new look. She dyed her hair so no one would recognize her. She got her nails done. And she got new clothes, short dresses and high heels. But Jean couldn't stay at Jasmine's house for free. She'd have to pay rent, $60 a night. And Jasmine said the girls that stayed with her made their money at strip clubs all over Dallas.
I asked them, did they have IDs so I could put them at the strip club with my girls or whatever. So they can have a job or something. You just can't be laying up in my house and not making no money.
Jean didn't have an ID. She was only 15. She says Jasmine told her she had only one other choice, selling sex. This may sound far-fetched, but imagine you're a teenage runaway, hundreds of miles from home. You're hungry, and you need a place to sleep. Then a stranger offers you those things. It sounds like they're trying to help, but they exploit you instead. And like Jean, you end up doing things you'd never imagine. At the state capitol in Austin, lawmakers started to pay attention.
All right. Mr. Chairman and members, we have a joint charge.
State representatives even held a hearing about it in 2016.
Study and evaluate the practice of youth being recruited into human trafficking. Specifically evaluate the scope of the pipeline of potential victims from foster care.
If you didn't catch what that lawmaker said, it was the pipeline of potential victims from foster care. In other words, lawmakers wanted to study why kids in the state's foster care system end up exploited by pimps.
All right, we'll start with invited testimony. So state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Angela Goodwin, and I am the Director of Investigations at Child Protective Services.
Angela Goodwin explained to lawmakers that most sex trafficking victims have been sexually abused, and a lot of them have had contact with the child welfare system. In other words, they're kids like Jean. She also said when kids run away, they're often approached by a pimp almost immediately, usually within 48 hours.
So why is that important to the foster care system? Because we now know through these statistics coming in that when a child runs from our care, we have to look for them right away, immediately.
Texas doesn't even come close to finding missing foster kids that quickly. In 2016, it took an average of 6 weeks to find them. And hundreds of foster kids who ran away weren't found. I asked Goodwin about this.
I mean, is 6 weeks acceptable, or what would be acceptable?
Well, right away is acceptable. Yeah. And then based on the statistic that I gave you, I mean, when you're getting past 48 hours, it's a very dangerous time.
Goodwin told us CPS is working more aggressively to find runaways. But the agency couldn't even say how many missing foster kids actually got reported to the proper authorities last year. In Jean's case, social workers at her group home did call the police as soon as they realized she was missing that day. But by then, she'd already been taken in by a pimp, Jasmine Johnson.
And I mean, Jasmine, she didn't care. She just pretty much, you know, you're going to do this and that's what you're going to do in order to stay here. And CPS treating us the way that they treated us, I was willing to do whatever I needed to do to stay away.
Jean quickly developed a routine on Gonzales Street, but she wasn't Jean anymore. Jasmine had given her a new name, Bunny. Every day, when it started to get dark, she would head outside in her new clothes. She'd slowly walk through the neighborhood, past some apartments and a basketball court, toward the mini-mart on the corner.
The street that Gonzales is off of, I'd walk from there back towards the right, and I'd just pretty much back and forth. And
sometimes, if a John stopped his car on the street corner, the transaction happened right there. Other times, the client drove her back to his place. It was $100 for an hour and $60 for 30 minutes. Jean had sex with a few different men, but she got scared. She remembers one guy who brought her back to his apartment. After a few minutes, he was really creeping her out. She thought she was in danger.
I ended up telling him I was going to the bathroom and left and walked all the way back to the house. So I'm getting out of here. Yeah. I don't like this. And it started getting real scary for me.
Jean decided she didn't want to stay at Jasmine's house anymore. So, now 16 years old, she packed up her things and went to stay with an ex-boyfriend in another part of Dallas. But after a couple of nights, His parents kicked her out. She was walking back to Jasmine's place in the dark when a driver pulled up and offered her a ride. They were just around the corner from Gonzales Street when police pulled over the driver for not using his turn signal. They found Jean in the back seat. She told police what was going on at Jasmine's house, and she ended up helping them investigate.
This is Detective Bordelon, badge number 6132. And Detective McMurray, badge number 4835, with complainant Jean Hall.
The detectives asked Jean to call Jasmine, who also went by the name Jay. They wanted help collecting evidence.
Hello.
Hey, is this Jay?
Yeah, this is Jay. Who is this?
Bunny.
Who?
Bunny.
I don't know you, bro.
Oh, my gosh. Jay, please just talk to me, because I haven't done anything. I've got caught.
Jasmine suspected Jean might be working with police after she left the house, so she pretended not to know Jean. But after officers later raided the house, Jasmine admitted Jean had stayed there. Jasmine was eventually convicted of trafficking a minor for sex. As for Jean, she was sent back to foster care and almost immediately ran away again. Then she was sent to an institution for troubled foster kids, but she ran away once more. Jean felt completely isolated, like no one could understand what she was going through. So she was amazed when we told her, children's advocates believe there are thousands of other kids with stories like hers. In fact, lawyers filed a lawsuit on behalf of all 12,000 kids in long-term foster care. They said the system had routinely violated children's civil rights. And in 2015, a federal judge agreed.
Federal Judge Janice Graham Jack ruled the state's foster care system unconstitutional, stating in her scathing opinion, the system is broken and has been for decades, and children almost uniformly leave state custody more damaged than when they entered.
The lead plaintiff in that lawsuit has a story a lot like Jean's. The judge wrote, these stories are typical of the foster care system in Texas, and she's ordered sweeping reforms. She said the state needs to give long-term foster kids a lot more support. That includes a lawyer and an advocate for each of them. The question is, do Texas lawmakers want to pay?
Good morning, members. Senate Finance Committee will come to order. Clerk, please call the roll.
Senator Nelson?
Here.
That's Jay Nelson, a Republican state senator with the most power over the Texas budget. In January 2017, she called in the head of the Texas Child Welfare Agency for a hearing. His name is Hank Whitman, and he asked lawmakers for more than $1 billion to make improvements. That would increase his budget by more than 25%.
This is a problem that's been going on for 3 decades. If we keep delaying, we'll never get there.
He pointed out that other states spend more. In 2016, Texas paid group homes up to $260 a day to care for troubled kids. California and Florida paid almost twice that. Whitman also wanted more money to hire child abuse investigators. That's because Texas fails to check on hundreds of kids each day who may be in immediate danger.
We have to spend the funding now, Senator. Otherwise, these children will end up in the criminal justice system, and they're there for life.
I cannot say this strongly enough.
Senator Jane Nelson cuts him off.
We want to see results. Hear me. We don't have time for any more of this other stuff. We need to find those kids. Your agency gets a total of $3.8 billion.
Hank Whitman said that's not enough to do the job.
Interesting. We either pay now or we pay later before somebody loses their life.
Senator Nelson declined my request for an interview. So did Texas Governor Greg Abbott. But Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton agreed to speak if we flew hundreds of miles to meet him at a public event. So we sent our political reporter, Patrick Svitek.
Oh, great. Hey, how you doing? Good. See you again. Thanks for making a little time for us. Appreciate it.
Patrick asked Paxton about the importance of funding foster care in Texas and what that means for fighting sex trafficking.
So I'm in an interesting spot. I don't get to decide policy. What I do is I enforce whatever the legislature gives me authority to do. So I would love for more to be done with, mm-hmm. with human trafficking.
Specifically with funding, or just mean in general?
Just in general, everything. I mean, it's devastating to our state, to our community. It's so sad. Mm-hmm. I certainly, the more we can do to save these, especially young women, mm-hmm. the better.
Saving these young women is exactly what that lawsuit against Texas foster care was meant to do. But after a judge ordered the state to make sweeping reforms, Ken Paxton fought them. He's delayed and appealed the judge's directions again and again. He says, as the state's top lawyer, he has a responsibility to fight lawsuits. Paxton says it's not his job to fix foster care. Instead, he's focusing on going after criminals, the pimps who exploit kids. Under his leadership, Texas has convicted more and more every year. But police on the ground say that approach only goes so far.
But you got to arrest an awful lot of people to have a dent on that.
That's Detective Michael McMurray. He's been sending pimps to prison for more than a decade, and he worked on Gene's case. But he thinks kids will continue to be exploited as long as the foster care system remains broken.
The McMurray theory of fixing this problem was going to be, we'll put all these pimps, all these traffickers in prison, and the word will get out, and people won't be doing this anymore because they'll be too afraid to go to prison, and that'll solve the problem. But the other part of that, you know, finding a place to put the kids, treating the kids, getting mental health services, it's not there. And the McMurray theory is not working out too well.
The McMurray theory didn't work out well for Jean either. After police recovered her from Jasmine's house and she ran away from her foster home again, the state eventually agreed to let her live with her mom. She was done with foster care. Jean testified in her pimp's trial. Jasmine Johnson was convicted of trafficking a minor for sex and sent to prison for 25 years. But the whole experience made Jean feel even more like a victim.
Liz, here you go. Here's your subpoena. We're going to need you to come testify. Oh, is that so? Well, I'm not going. Well, if you don't go, you're going to jail. Okay, well, whatever, you know. Thanks, y'all. So much for the victims, right?
Jean wishes she'd gotten help finishing school and finding a job. She had no way to support herself. Jean had another child, a son, but she also got into drugs. So the last time we saw her, she was in the Lamar County Courthouse in Paris, Texas. Nina and I went to meet her at her 9 a.m. hearing.
Did she give you a number?
When we get into the courtroom, we see Jean sitting on the other side, her head in her hands. She's been charged with possession of methamphetamines. The hearing only lasts a couple of minutes. We aren't allowed to record. Suddenly, Jean runs out of the courtroom, so we follow her. And when she sees us, she gives us each a big, long hug.
Hey, Jean, what happened?
They're gonna let me stay out the 21st.
Through her tears, Jean tells us she's going to plead guilty to her charges and spend at least 6 months in a state jail with a rehab program.
Staying out, it's a good program from what everybody's told me. It's been away from my babies.
She thinks rehab would really help her, but it's hours away. Jean's already lost her daughter. She doesn't want to be away from her son. His birthday is in a couple of days, so she asks if she can go to jail after that, and the prosecutors agree. We walk out of the Paris, Texas courthouse into the pouring rain. All of a sudden, Jean runs out into the middle of the street, smiling, her arms outstretched. It seems like she's trying to take advantage of these last moments of freedom.
I hate this town.
Those last words, I hate this town.
That story from the Texas Tribune's Edgar Walters and Nina Satija. Since it first aired, state lawmakers have given the Texas Child Welfare Agency an extra $500 million, about half of what it asked for. They also created a $3 million grant program to give child sex trafficking victims services like health care and counseling. It's the first time the state has funded a program like this. It turns out, a lot of sex trafficking victims in Texas can only get the help they need in jail. When we come back, we go behind prison walls to meet a woman who's helping girls like Jean piece their lives back together.
This is how we do it.
This is how we do it.
La, 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 la.
I love Miss Kathy.
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Support for Reveal comes from Home Advisor, matching homeowners with home improvement professionals for a variety of home projects, from minor repairs to major remodels. Homeowners can read reviews of local pros and book appointments online at homeadvisor.com.